Where's the beer, Tom?
What?
The beer. Where's the beer?
I thought you were getting the beer.
You what? No beer? You idiot, Tom. You total idiot. That was your job, you complete moron. You cretin. That's what you are. A total and utter cretin.
It was a joke, Rob. I was joking. It was a Christmas joke.
Oh. I see.
Of course I got the beer. It's from Beer 52. I got 8 specially themed beers, and there are snacks and even an award-winning magazine for just £5.95 postage. I researched it all online. All I had to do was go to beer52.com/peep.
That sounds like a lovely case of beers. I'm sorry I flew off the handle a bit.
That wasn't very Christmassy.
No, it wasn't. I apologise. So if I wanted to get my own free case of beer, how would I go about doing that?
Well, to get your first free case of beers, simply head to beer52.com/peep. You'll get 8 specially themed beers, a couple of snacks, and that award-winning magazine. All you need to do is pay the £5.95 for postage.
Brilliant. Cheers.
Hi, I'm Izzy Sutty, and you're listening to Podcast Secrets of the Pharaohs.
Hello and welcome to Podcast Secrets of the Pharaohs, a podcast all about discussing and reviewing the British sitcom Peep Show. My name's Tom Harrison and I'm joined, as always, by Rob Graham.
Hello!
And the final countdown continues as we arrive at the penultimate episode of Peep Show. Rob, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm not going to stress anymore how emotional I'm feeling about coming to the end of our run. I'm just coming to terms with it. Tom and I had a brief conversation before we started recording about what the future held and how much I enjoy making Peep Show memes. So I need to find some way of replacing that, the emptiness that I'll feel inside after this podcast is done. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Yeah, it's definitely weird to be saying penultimate episode. Of course, we mentioned last week there will be some other things before we wrap up for good. But yeah, it's feeling very final with these kind of, you know, the standard format is very soon going to be ending. So hopefully they're good ones. I enjoyed watching this episode. I'm looking forward to the finale and what that brings as well. But yeah, definitely weird times.
Yeah, we should probably do our weekly Robert Webb on Strictly update. I'm sure people enjoyed us doing that last week. He danced as Kermit the Frog this week, which was fantastic to see. And David and Victoria were in the audience watching him, which was also great. He survived another week. Don't know what he's dancing next week. By the time you're hearing this, it's the Saturday, isn't it? So he'll be dancing again, like, today.
Tonight, or
if you've saved us for your Monday commute to work, then he may or may not have been voted out of Strictly by them, but hope not. He's he's giving me some good content on social media, if nothing else.
Fair play. Right, okay, so yeah, this week we are going to be talking about Series 9, Episode 5, which is called Kid Farm. But before we get started with the synopsis and opening impressions, Rob, we've got one new patron this week, but I think they were today or were they yesterday? I can't quite remember.
No, I think, yeah, I think they were. So we're recording on the Monday. I think this was, yeah, last night. So we've got a big welcome to Hannah Ostrov. Big welcome to you. You've joined on our Banditos tier. And another shout out to Bence Bartow, Rakeen Patel, Brandon Jackson, Drew Allen, Gareth Stevens, Jamie from Up and Running, Michael McQueen, Joe Sims, Sean Ronan Smith, Caroline Murray, Rory Robinson, Rob Craik, Adam Dawn, Eric Lenz, David Butler, Vijay Bal, Isla Skokowska, and I'm going to say your name for the first time, Stephen Darrensett. You signed up 7 months ago, longer than that, and I've been saying your name wrong every single time, so I really, really apologise. And
sorry.
Equally, a big apology, to Justin Dunleavy, not Justin Dunleavy. I've been saying that wrong since January the 12th, 2021. So I'm surprised you carried on paying us, to be fair. Like, so big shout out to both of you guys. We've also got Jason Martin, Nick Howard, Simon Darlington, Eleanor Wall, Benjamin Price, Olivia Calmus-Hoy, Steve Morano, Sarah McDaniel, Dee Bizzle, John Barker, Isaac Marley Morgan, Ash Krishna, Stuart Hill, John C. Ralston, Jonathan Gardner, Tim Chamberlain, Jessica Isler, Toby Irving, Michael Collins, John Fraser, Joel Johansson-Byberg, Alex Watson, Doug Simpson, Andrew Mason, Daniel Thompson, Laurie Johnson, Trisha Atenzia, Mike Kavanagh, Dave Pink, Robert Horvath, and Tom. Something very exciting happened to me just now. We've gone on to two pages on Patreon. So a final big shout out to Darren Friedrichs. So I had to scroll onto the second page to get to you, Darren.
The OG Darren, yeah, shout out to you and everyone else, and Hannah, the new joiner. Yes, it's, yeah, great to have you all on board. Especially, you know, some of these people like Darren, like first patron, like, you know, we're here nearly at the end now, and some people have been supporting for a long, long time, so thank you very much for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, okay, so yeah, we're gonna get into Kid Farm. We're gonna start with the synopsis. I wanted to point out as well, this episode is called Kid Farm, but on, I think it was Netflix, they call it Kid Cave. So I had to have a little look into it to see, you know, actually what the episode title was. And it is Kid Farm, despite, you know, the play centre actually being called Kid Cave. But it is officially called Kid Farm, so that's what we're going to be calling it for the purposes of this podcast. So, yeah, we're going to open with the synopsis, and then we'll get, yeah, both of our opening thoughts. Are there any listener opinions, if any of those come in, Rob, or do we not ask for those this time?
I did ask for them, but I think I only got the one.
Okay.
I don't know whether that's reflective of the the caliber of the episode or the time at which I put the tweet out. But the sole reply that we had was from Jake Danat on Twitter, and he said, "Decent episode. Enjoy the fact, with many other episodes, that they're out of their natural habitat, and in this case, in a kid's play area for a large portion. Though Sophie just annoys me this episode and reassures me why she's my least favourite character." Now, Jake, if you've been listening to the podcast for a while, I now do not express my opinion on Sophie. So, no, I will touch on that, because I do, like, I feel like, I know we're sort of going into what my opinion is on this now. But I think Sophie obviously comes back, and we've talked about how Olivia Colman obviously comes back very fleetingly for these sort of last couple of episodes. She's made it big time by this point, I think, in her other acting roles. And I don't, like, obviously we needed Sophie in these episodes to kind of bring the storyline to an end. And actually, no, this, she's not in the last episode, is she? She's not in Are We Gonna Be Alright?
Is she not?
I know that her last day of filming was in the Kid Cave, the Kid Farm episode, because there's a picture that Sam Baines put on Instagram that is like Olivia's last day of filming, and Robert, David and Olivia are definitely in the Kid Farm. But that doesn't mean it was her last day, her last episode that she was in, because I know that the last scene that Robert Webb ever filmed was the one in the office of the previous episode that we recorded, when he goes right to get the office, like the £400, fuck my mouth.
Like, I'm just having a look, and yes, Sophie isn't in the final episode, so this is her farewell. Yeah, they've brought her back for this role. Yeah, I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah, and obviously, like, I think she did need to say goodbye. Like, the Sophie storyline wasn't really finished. And also, she was an integral part the entire way through. So for her not to have got a goodbye would have been, I don't know, like, I don't know, it wouldn't have let the show down, but it would have been one of those sort of, like, oh, she's now too big for us to get back. So the very crux of what the show was about in the first two series, first three series,
that's four really series.
Gets, well, yeah, first five, really, because she's still involved in series five. Almost becomes a bit redundant. Like, that storyline's never really wrapped up, because they opened it up again in recent history, didn't they? As in, like, they've got this potential plan of them, like, getting back together, and obviously that's what happens in this episode. But, like, the case has never really been closed with Sophie.
No, exactly. I mean, Sophie was a huge part of, like, the foundation of the show. You know, the OG, the one. So it's absolutely fitting that they bring her back for the final series. It's a bit of a shame, actually, that she's not in the, you know, the very final episode, but perhaps that was, you know, conflicting schedules or something. Like you say, at this point, you know, Olivia is kind of, she's a very much fast rising star at this point. So that wouldn't surprise me, but I think she absolutely needed to come back at some point for some kind of role. And it's I think it's great to have her back. She's, you know, gone off the wagon a little bit, but I'm sure we'll talk about that plenty. But it's great to be able to kind of say goodbye to Sophie's character, definitely.
Yeah, and like you said, it is a very weird episode for her because she basically spends the entire thing either like hungover or drunk. So it's not out of character for her in this last episode as such, because we've talked about this sort of like spiral that she's gone down on, but it's not how I necessarily like want to remember Sophie, if that's not too like soft a thing to say. Like, this is the last memory that people have of Sophie, and actually it's probably not reflective of what a good character she was.
Yeah, there's something a little bit tragic about it, really, isn't it? Because she's kind of, yeah, gone back to, you know, some of her old habits a little bit with the drinking and stuff. But I feel like now that they're much older and the fact that, you know, she's a parent now, it definitely does make it a little more tragic, particularly, you know, where this episode is taking place at the kid cave, or like of all the places to just be like smashed out your face, like not going to be winning any Mother of the Year awards. But it's a bit of a weird one, but it makes a little bit sense. And Sophie kind of opens up in this episode as to, you know, why she's behaving the way she is. So I do think it kind of fits her character. But yeah, like I say, a little bit more depressing than it was like six series ago.
Yeah, 100%. And I think as an episode as a whole, I quite like this one. Like, it's not the best one of series nine. I think I've already established, I think Threeism is. But actually, I felt like I'd been quite disparaging about Series 9, like, just in the past, not even necessarily whilst we've been recording it. But actually, watching this one back, I was like, this is actually a fairly good, like, standard Peep Show episode. There's a real sort of, like, almost like a role reversal of Mark and Jez in this episode, where Mark is suddenly starting to go a little bit more, like, footloose and fancy free, like, having the spontaneous sex in the toilets with April, which is a very Jeremy type thing to do.
Yeah, definitely.
And then like Jeremy's still in this phase of like trying to get his life slightly more back on track, although he goes about trying to sort of screw over Superhands through various like kind of not necessarily the best means. There definitely is like a slight sort of role reversal, I feel.
I can sort of see what you mean there. Yeah, Jez is kind of initially locked in some kind of like legal dispute. I mean, I know it's far from that, but kind of the essence of it is kind of like that, isn't it? So whereas Mark's kind of, I do feel like this episode is a little bit kind of all over the place with like, you know, the whole April and Mark thing kind of bounces all around the place, and it's all a bit, okay, what's going on? No, changed her mind. Oh no, she's back, and all of that. But I guess that's kind of, it makes sense given that she's in quite a dilemma, April, kind of trapped between Angus and Mark, who are both extremely kind of complicated men in themselves. So, I wasn't quite sure what to make of this one. I mean, I enjoy all Peep Show episodes, which I say every time. But there was, I didn't quite know what to make of this one, really.
There's some brilliant lines in this one
quote,
not even necessarily as a quotable. It's not like they're not memorable Peep Show like meme worthy lines, but like there's some, this is the episode where he says about sitting in the bath and having a magnum, doesn't he, which I think is sort of one of those sort of ridiculous messages that he shares. And then the great one from Sophie is the, I like you Mark, but I don't love you. I think that's one of Sophie's best lines.
It also has one of my favourite, like, probably like top three, like, episode closers with Jeremy's, like, sorry, snake. It's just, like, absolutely perfect. So it does have, it does have that going for it. There are some cracking quotes. Shall we dive into the episode? I realised we didn't do the synopsis, so let me do that, and then we'll dive right into the first scene, shall we?
Yeah, let's go for it.
Okay, so here is Kid Farm. After being kicked to the curb by April, Mark faces a dilemma when mother of his child, Sophie, makes him an offer to be one big happy family. But when April has a change of heart, Mark's head is turned once again. Meanwhile, Jeremy and Superhands have a big break on the internet, but as they argue over who wrote their money-making lyrics, Jeremy takes things to a dangerous level. So, let's dive into Kid Farm. At the start of the episode, Jeremy walks in on Mark preparing for his son Ian to come round, and he's laying out various activities that he's clearly put a lot of time into, and I thought this was quite... It was interesting to see, this was probably the first time we've seen Mark behaving, you know, like a father, like doing his parenting responsibilities. Like any kind of previous glimpse or mention of Ian has always been sort of in passing, from my recollection. So what do you make of Mark setting up all of this stuff for Ian and kind of seeing him play dad? Because it's quite clear that he's gone to quite a lot of effort for this.
I feel like it's quite a middle-class version of I don't see my child enough, and when I do, I'm going to really sort of overcompensate. Like, he doesn't see him very often by what we can gather. I don't know whether the arrangement that they made in Series 8 with the whole you can have him like Mondays, Tuesdays and Wednesdays or whatever the agreement was. It was like, no, it was like Wednesdays and Thursdays, wasn't it? And Mark wanted to do Italian lessons. So I don't know what the what the arrangement ever finally was, but Ian definitely doesn't play a big part in Mark's life, or certainly the life that we see. And he seems to have just gone, where do I feel safe? I feel safe in knowledge and intelligence. So what can I do to impart that to my son? I can basically create him like a classroom within my flat. But I don't know how old Ian is at this point.
To me, he kind of looks about 3.
As old as that?
Maybe 2 then. Look like a toddler, isn't he? I mean, he's walking and running around. He does. I don't think he says anything. So yeah, maybe slightly younger. Maybe sort of around 2-ish.
But then Mark is doing like I'm just trying to pause it on the actual bit where he's got stuff on the table to see. Like obviously, I'm a teacher. I could probably have a look at that and work out roughly. What sort of age he's meant to be. But he's got like Mandarin flashcards and stuff on there. Like, this kid presumably doesn't know, if he's not speaking in English, why the hell is he learning Mandarin?
That's a really good point. Yeah, that is a very good point. Yeah, we don't see him speak a word of English. So yeah, Mark's clearly going to quite extremes. Mark's probably the sort of person where you hear, don't you, like your brain is, you know, like a sponge when you're really young, and picking up a language is a lot easier when you're a child. So he's probably seen that and gone, right, let's start with the most, you know, arguably the most difficult language to grasp, being Mandarin. So I'm not too surprised that we don't see Ian a lot, given that, you know, if we had episodes filled with Mark looking after Ian, like that kind of limits the plot for an episode. But it makes it interesting to kind of get that glimpse into his life as a parent, and to kind of see how he is. And I guess I'm not too surprised that he is this way, because I think you said that, you know, this is where he feels comfortable, kind of like academia, you know, playing the role of the professor or whatever, trying to turn him into a super toddler at one point, doesn't he? So while not too surprising, but I found it very interesting to see Mark setting all this stuff up.
Yeah, I've just paused it on the table, actually. He's got an abacus, he's got these Mandarin cards, he's then got like a box of cards that look like they're sort of like observational, point out things in the picture. But then he's got a massive plate of carrots and cucumber, which I'm presuming is, because he talks about teaching him gratification, doesn't he? So I think he's feeding him when he gets a question right.
Yes, but it's more deferring gratification, isn't it? Because there's something like a chocolate treat that is like within sight, but always just out of reach. Which is just kind of savage, really. Poor bastard.
Yeah, it's like it's literally the carrot on a stick, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, the chocolate on a stick.
But unfortunately, you know, Mark's gone to all of this effort, but when Sophie does arrive, you know, Mark thinks that she's going to drop Ian off, but she comes empty-handed and says that Ian won't be coming after all, and that, oh, but you know, meet us tomorrow at the Kid Cave instead. And Sophie's arrival is, you know, quite blunt, isn't it? She's clearly not in a good spot. She's clearly been, you know, having a few drinks. What did you make of that as just, you know, Sophie's reintroduction to the show? Because it's been a while since we've seen her, and here she is just kind of like bang, bang, bang on the door, disrupting things right from the off.
Yeah, she's always had that about her, hasn't she? She's always had this sort of like, I'm not suggesting that because she's drinking, she's sort of gone off the rails, but the fact that she's clearly worse for wear at what I'm imagining, judging from like the light and whatever else, it's probably like early afternoon or late morning. Like, she's clearly inebriated at an inappropriate time of day to be drunk.
Yeah.
And
so same.
Where did she say Ian was?
Like with her parents or something? I can't quite remember. I think it might have been her parents.
So like, she's obviously like, she's not neglecting her duty or anything by any means, but I think I can't really remember where we left Sophie, like when her last episode was, what sort of mental state or whatever else she was in. But this just does seem to be a massive like downhill slope that she's ended up being, like sort of drunk in the middle of the day. It doesn't sit well with the viewer, but it also, I don't think it sits well with Mark. Like, this is presumably the first time he might have seen her in a while, and it's obviously quite a big deterioration.
Yeah, and I mean, let's not forget, while, you know, Mark and Sophie have got their issues, at the end of the day, she's his son's mother, and if she's not in a good state, then what does that mean for poor little Ian? I think the last time we saw Sophie, or we might have seen Jeff more recently, and, you know, the impression was that they were very much together. Jeff had mentioned that he'd moved into Nana's cottage, but there's no mention of Jeff anymore, and instead Sophie's kind of opening up to Mark about her relationship issues with her boyfriend, who's called Duncan, who we've never seen or met before. This is the first time hearing of him. So clearly Jeff's long gone, and Pat, it seems like Duncan is, you know, the source of Sophie's trouble, and probably the reason why she's been hitting the drink so early in the day. And yeah, she opens up, she's quite honest about it.
So, what's happened? What happened with Ian?
Oh, it's fucking Duncan. Obviously, you're going to feel jealous. He's around the whole time. I know how you feel about Duncan.
I love Duncan. Sexless, unthreatening Duncan. Teaching him maths and tag-teaming the Mandarin flashcards.
Duncan's a great guy, but he's a shit.
Oh.
You know how he tutors?
Of course. When I saw how Ian could hold a pen, I nearly shat.
Well, I think he's getting a bit fucking cosy with one of the mums, Alison. Remember Alison?
Oh, right.
What do I do? I'm pretty sure he's having an affair.
Well, I think you shouldn't be too hasty. Maybe everything will run its course. I just think Duncan sounds like a real catch.
Just let him get Ian started on the viola and ancient Greek.
I don't know whether Mark still holds a torch for Sophie, but he refers to him as unthreatening, sexless Duncan. Like, Mark's clearly not in a position where he's feeling jealous of Duncan because of anything to do with Sophie, and clearly is quite happy that he's in Ian's life because he's pushing his learning forward.
Yeah, precisely. I think there's something that, I think Mark, even regardless of his feelings towards Sophie, I think there's always probably going to be a little bit of, like, who's the man that's kind of replaced me, particularly given that, yeah, this person has like a presence in Ian's life. So I think Mark is always going to have, you know, some sort of feelings to, you know, towards whoever it is, but he seems more than happy for it to be Duncan, because like you say, sexless kind of, you know, Mark's actually might have some sort of edge over him. And despite Sophie being pretty sure, you know, she opens up about she thinks Duncan's cheating on her, Mark's attempt to kind of persuade her to stay with him, you know, oh, you know, don't, you know, fly off the handle at him, you just, you know, be patient, see how it goes. And I mean, his motives are about as transparent as they come, aren't they? Like, it's clear he, you know, just wants Duncan to stay to help Ian.
Yeah, and I also presume there's a big difference between Duncan and the previous partner, who was Jeff, and she she was with Jeff for a while and Mark clearly hated Jeff. Like, he even says when he hands over Ian in a previous episode, he says, hand over the thing I love the most. It's like, hand over the thing I love the most to the person I hate the most or something.
Yeah.
Like, so Duncan probably is absolutely no threat. And like you said, he's doing what Mark wants him to do. And it's almost that sort of, again, that quite selfish attitude of Mark of being like, I know he's probably cheating on Sophie. He doesn't treat her too well. He's clearly pushing her to this sort of point of her life where she's drinking in the middle of the day a lot. But he's suiting my needs. So as far as I'm concerned, like, keep going.
Yeah. It's clear that he doesn't really care about, you know, Sophie's state of mind, which is foolish, really. It's quite short-sighted, because Duncan might be helping Ian with the flashcards, but if he's causing Sophie to be in a state, like, that's going to have, you know, far, you know, worse consequences for his, like, general well-being. So, yeah, quite short-sighted of Mark, actually, but he doesn't seem to care all that much, which is very, you know, telling of Mark's kind of character, which I think, after, you know, having watched him for almost 9 full series now, I don't think comes as a surprise to anyone. That's just very much how Mark is. So meanwhile, in his bedroom, Jeremy is receiving some much better news, because Superhands has popped round and he's dropping off a check for music royalties, believe it or not. It's been a while since we've kind of, you know, heard anything about the band.
Remember Grandma's boner? Mid-noughties, when we teamed up with Perpetual Spinners, did a bit of turbo folk.
All the Whores of Malta.
Exactly. Well, Whores of Malta has been picked up. It's on a skills video for a Hair to Berlin defender.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, plus, I've got a check here for you for £250.
Oh, my God. Mark, I've done a thing.
Jez is absolutely delighted with this, isn't he? This is, like, the biggest achievement in music for him after, like, 10 plus years, which is quite tragic, really, but it's funny in the way that Jez is kind of celebrating this for a relatively small amount of money. But I don't know, kind of nice to see Jez get a win, I guess.
Yeah, where does this rank amongst playing the Wolverhampton Festivus, and then what else has he done? He didn't play in the Man Feelings band because he got kicked out. That's basically it, isn't it? Like, he really, really, considering his whole life has been dedicated to music, or his whole life in the show has been dedicated to music and a little bit of life coaching, to make £250. And how many views has that video got to have got to get that amount of money? Because I think, like, isn't YouTube credit, like, 0.01 pence per 1,000 views or something stupid? So presumably that video has done quite well for them to even get £250 each of the royalties.
I think it works that way if you're the, like, uploader of the video, but I imagine they've just been paid to have their song feature in the video.
In which case, £250 doesn't seem like very much.
Probably not, no. But Jeremy, he'll take it, and I think the main reason, the money is obviously nice, because it's like, oh yeah, I guess technically he can call himself a professional musician in that case. But I think the main thing is that he's expressed the last few episodes now that he's worried about, you know, Joe not really taking him very seriously. You know, Joe poked fun at him for, you know, his intellectual prowess or lack thereof at the dinner party. And Jez seems to think that this will somehow change that perception of him being kind of a loser. And I'm not quite sure if it would do that.
No, and especially, like, the first question I'd be asking is, oh, so, like, brilliant, you've made it as a musician, like, you've got something on YouTube, like, how much did you get paid for it? Yeah, £250. Okay, so not that big time then. It's like, it's not like you've just signed with Universal or, like, although they nearly did sign with Universal.
Today. Yeah.
It's not like you've suddenly made your first million or something, or even, like, uploaded some of your own work onto YouTube. It's just been picked up by somebody. So, yeah, I'm not sure if it is really, it's not him hitting the big time in Joe's mind anyway, especially when the conversation then turns to the fact that as they're scrolling through the video, it comes up with saying, like, music by Jeremy Osborne, and it says Superhands, doesn't it? It doesn't say, like, it doesn't have his real name. And then lyrics by just Superhands, and Jeremy obviously takes objection to that, and it's quickly sort of blown over in Hans's mind anyway, but Jeremy is clearly going to hold on to this for the remainder of the episode.
Yeah, this is the seed has been planted that, yeah, it's going to grow through the course of this episode, and this is going to be the big kind of conflict and in the Jeremy arc. So we will pick that up later. But back in the kitchen, we see a sort of increasingly drunk Sophie over the course of this scene and over the course of the episode, really. Sophie offers Mark the chance to reunite as a family. She wants him to move into Nana's cottage with her and Ian. And this is, you know, it's out of nowhere, really, isn't it? Do you think that this is, you know, the drink talking? Or do you think Sophie is just desperate in general and is having, you know, these issues with Duncan, and Mark is kind of like, he's a known, he might be an evil, but he's a known evil. She kind of knows what he's getting, what she's getting with him.
Well, she refers to him as her ballast, doesn't she? Like, he says, do you want some bread as your ballast? And I will be honest, that's the first time I'd ever heard the word ballast. I know what ballast means based on Peep Show.
Yes.
I remember looking it up after that. So I think, like, that's what she's seeing. Like, I think, obviously, the asking him is prompted or is certainly sped along by the fact that she's drunk. But I think part of it probably would have asked if she was sober, in that, like, I need a bit of sort of stability. Yes, we can sort of live in this kind of messed up, we kind of hate each other state of affairs, but it's better to know where I am with somebody that I basically hate, but that will provide... Because ultimately, when you're a parent, your priority is then your child, isn't it? And actually, it's better for Mark and Sophie to be together for the sake of Ian and just put their differences to one side for their son than to just give him this messed up life that he's currently sort of got, where he's got various different people looking after him. His mum's coming off the rails, or his mum's off the rails. I don't know. I think it is obviously drunk person's words or a sober person's thoughts. Like,
yeah,
I do
definitely
think this is obviously something that's on her mind for to ask, but it's probably been, like, yeah, facilitated by the fact that she's drunk nearly a bottle of rum.
Yeah, I think an interesting point about what you made, you know, is it better if Mark and Sophie together for Ian? I'm not so sure, personally. Like, a relationship that is clearly not going to be a, you know, any real kind of representation of, you know, what a marriage should be. I don't know what kind of effects that will have on Ian. We've seen, you know, how the influence of Mark's parents on him, Sophie's parents, you know, that's kind of what they would be entering into, isn't it? Sophie's dad and mum basically kind of hate each other. Like, is that what Ian would be getting? Not sure if that's particularly great, but yeah, you could argue, is it better than Sophie day drinking and, you know, getting cheated on by, you know, a string of potential partners? Yeah, maybe Mark is the better option, I guess. Hard one.
And without wanting to turn this into a relationship podcast, I think, like, every relationship is obviously different. Like, it depends on how Mark responded to... So if Mark basically, like, stabilised Sophie, they don't really have to have much to do with each other, but they do work together and bring up their child. And I do appreciate there are plenty of parents out there who are separated and work very well to co-parent and bring their children up very successfully together. But clearly Sophie needs some sort of stability, because at the moment she's all over the place. And yeah, I don't know. I think the difference between her parents and Mark and Sophie is that, like, Sophie's dad is not a nice person. I'm not suggesting Mark is a saint, but I think, like...
Far from it.
Sophie's dad is kind of... is quite venomous and quite sort of vindictive. And I know that his wife is the one that's having the affair, but I think they're both quite toxic for each other. And I don't know... I don't know how toxic for each other Mark and Sophie are, or would be moving forward. Because we didn't really have long enough of them properly just being together in a normal way to
see... No.
their marriage crumbled really quickly because, well, because of what happened.
Hours.
So I don't know whether if the emotion hadn't been so high on their wedding day, whether they'd have got past that and been able to carry on. I think they get under each other's skin. And I think that's it's not a healthy way to go back into a marriage. But like we said, without spoiling the end of it, we know this doesn't materialise.
No, but I mean, it's a huge part of the plot for this episode. So I think it's definitely kind of, one worth discussing. I wonder, you made some good points about, that there are some differences between, Sophie's parents and Mark and Sophie. But I do wonder, we've seen Sophie's parents after, 30, 40 years of marriage, which is obviously going to amplify any issues. They're only going to, get bigger and bigger. So I do still wonder whether that is just kind of Mark's future if he does sign up for getting back to Sophie. But you're right, we don't really need to worry about it too much, because Mark's clearly got eyes for April, who is the one who interrupts his conversation with Sophie. But it's not good news. April was popped around to essentially shatter Mark's world, bless him, because they've gone from enjoying that kiss from last episode, which kind of sent Mark to, he was top of the world, wasn't he? He was loving life over the moon. But April has now decided that it was all a huge mistake and she doesn't think they should see each other again. And Mark sums it up best, I think. It's a knife to the gut.
The thing was, and I was thinking about this in the end of last episode and then the beginning of this episode, they shared like one very short kiss. And Mark has let his mind run away with him, presumably in the build-up to this conversation, in the gap between the two things happening. Like, we presume they didn't go any further. It wasn't like it was a massively, like, passionate kiss. There wasn't any sort of further movement isn't really what I mean, but you know what I mean. Like, they didn't then like passionately like go to the bedroom. It was like a kiss and that's it. Clearly nothing has then happened in the meantime. So April has then clearly gone and had like a trip of conscience or something and like realized that I might be in a messed up marriage, but I'd rather be in this messed up marriage than let this go any further. Like, she's a person of commitment. Like, I know she's cheated on Angus, but she is somebody who clearly values the sort of the sanctity of marriage. And I've made a commitment to Angus. I'm going to honour that.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is the dilemma that is kind of core to this episode, isn't it? It is April kind of bouncing around between Mark and Angus. And yeah, she's had this, she's cheated on her husband. Obviously, we know that he's done that to her in the past as well. So perhaps she thinks, she can be forgiven for one mistake. But again, she's going to be bouncing between these two this episode. And unfortunately, we don't get to see Angus, which is a bit of a shame. But April is all over the shop in this episode. And it's interesting because we know that Peep Show isn't, very conventional as such, but this idea that, April's back for the final series, we're hyping her up as the one, the real one after so many before. And we kind of wonder, like, going by the end, like, is Peep Show going to get a happy ending? And we know that it's very much a show filled with unhappy endings and, sort of anti-climaxes or whatever. But, just part of you, I think, always wonders, like, by the end, like, surely Mark will end up happy with someone kind of like April, but it seems, only one episode to go after this and it's all very much at risk.
But I don't think I ever expected Mark and April to end up together. Like, I don't think we knew realistically. I mean, there's a point in this episode that I want to touch on slightly later where I remember watching this at the time thinking, is this how the final episode is going to finish? But I'll touch on that when we get to that particular scene. But I just think, I just don't think that I ever thought that they were going to end up together at the end of this. Like, I always seem to remember thinking that Mark can't have his happy ending. And certainly can't have it with a married woman, because that wouldn't fit the that wouldn't fit the rest of the trajectory of his life.
Yeah, that's very true. That would be... You'd have to wrap up a lot to kind of make it a clean, happy ending.
Process
an entire divorce and all of that. Yeah, I don't know. I guess, I mean, like I say, Peep Show is a show for, you know, there's very rarely a happy ending. You could probably count the happy endings in episodes on one hand. But in a way, I always kind of wondered, like, oh, maybe they would, buck the trend and it would end well. Well, I mean, not well. I mean, a happy ending would be, you know, Mark gets his conventional, you know, wife and 2.4 kids with a detached four-bedroom house in the suburbs. And we know that definitely wasn't going to happen. But I thought you might get a slice, a sliver of a happy ending. And at the moment, his world has been shattered and that is looking, you know, a million miles away. But we pick up then the following morning, don't we? Mark and Jez have a bit of a get-together. They're discussing their various issues. Jez with the music, Mark with, you know, between Sophie and April. Mark's understandably devastated about everything, the way this is very kind of abruptly ended. And Jeremy is, again, he's expressing this kind of worry about Joe not taking him very seriously, thinking he's a loser. And Mark, I think, kind of sums up what the audience is thinking at this point, where he questions, like, is it really, you know, is you getting a lyrics credit on a YouTube football video, is that really going to, you know, move the needle all that much?
Yeah, and that's basically what you said earlier, wasn't it? It was like, is that quantifiably a success for Jeremy? Or is it a success for Jeremy in Joe's eyes, more importantly?
I think, though, that kind of, you know, making a huge fuss about this and fixating on something that is relatively, I mean, to Jez it is significant, but I think from any outsider it is insignificant. I think, if anything, I think it will make Jez look like more of a loser to Joe.
Yeah, like, this is what I'm really, like, proud of. This is my biggest achievement in life. It's like, yeah, I got a minor music credit on a really minor viral video. We missed, by the way, the opening scene, or the opening line of this scene, which is one of the most famous Peep Show lines, where Mark is just doing the toast. He's just like,
butter the toast, eat the toast, shit the toast. God, life's relentless.
That is one of, I think, one of the most Mark lines, especially in the quandary that he's currently finding himself in. But it's one of the most sort of memorable Mark lines in the entire show.
It's, yeah, it's Pete Corrigan, isn't it? It's perfect opener to the scene. But yeah, Jez is kind of worrying about all of this. Mark is questioning whether it really even matters. Mark not really, I guess he's not taking this issue very seriously, is he? So he doesn't really give him any kind of meaningful advice. Mark's instead kind of just using it as an opportunity to boast about his IQ score.
Take the advice of a man who's been scientifically proven to have above average intelligence.
Oh, not the IQ test. I wasn't concentrating.
133 IQ. So what if I had a bit of help? It's only the dunderheads with their low IQs who don't figure out the way to win is looking stuff up on the internet.
I don't need to take a stupid IQ test to know I'm three times as intelligent as you.
Oh, really? And what's three times 133?
Three hundreds and 30 and 30 and 30, but then the... all the threes? Is it a trick question? Mark, no one does maths these days. We've all got calculators in our pockets, just like all our maths teachers said we wouldn't. Anyway, this proves nothing. Probably most people are below average.
I love that, you know, Mark doesn't even dignify it with a response. Instead, we just kind of get, like, the Corrigan stare of just, like, genuine disbelief that someone could say something so stupid.
Yeah, and I hadn't really picked up on that until I watched it again for the episode, that, like, most people are below average. But we then find out what Jeremy is getting himself in a tiz about, and we discover that the lines that he's claiming credit for are in fact a sort of robotic mechanical voice that says, atoll protected. So it's not even a line that he's singing or in fact has written as an original lyric. It's just something that he has copied off I don't know, like the Civilian Aviation Authority, I think he references.
Yeah, so Jeremy manages to remember where he came up with the lyrics. He says he saw Mark's plane ticket once and it said Atoll Protected on it. So with that sudden, you know, revelation, he manages to convince Mark to come with him to kind of have it out with Hans and try and get the credit updated to include Jez and probably ideally bump Hans off it altogether in terms of the lyrics. So yeah, he manages to convince Mark to come along with him. And on the way there, Jeremy asks about, you know, what's going on with Mark and Sophie. Like, would he seriously consider actually getting back together with her?
Bit of a depressing backwards step.
Yeah, well, April's kaput. Maybe that's just life. Your expectations get ground down and down until finally you settle for a life that would have mortified you 20 years ago, but now seems like a blessed relief.
It's the journey of life. Like Radio 1, Radio 2, Classic FM, Heart, Magic, Dead.
An incredibly dark and depressing thought.
But incredibly, like, on point and realistic. There's so many people that I imagine that are sort of like, obviously, they're in their late 30s, well, 40s, aren't they? That he turns 40, Jeremy turns 40 in the next episode. But like, they're in their late 30s, and I can imagine there are plenty of people our age who are very much like, when I was 19, I had all these dreams that I was going to be like a big like property developer. I'd be working in the city, or I'd be doing this, I'd be married to this person, and da 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 da. And then it's like, I'm marrying somebody, or I'm going to get back with somebody that we've established we don't really love each other. The person I actually truly love has gone back to her husband. I'm still living in this flat with you. This really wasn't how I imagined my life turning out. But I just thought the whole line there is incredibly on point.
Yeah, definitely. It seems like, you know, Sophie would probably be the person that, you know, I don't know how, you know, whether people actually do this in real life, but you see a lot in TVs and movies where it's like, you know, if we're both single when we're 40, like, shall we get together? And Sophie very much feels like the person that Mark would make that sort of arrangement with.
Did you see my Facebook post about that? Is that why you've referenced it?
I didn't, no.
I literally, I was out with some friends at the weekend, and we had a conversation about what percentage of people in the population do you think have actually got married to the person that they said, if we're not married by the time we're 30, 35, 40, whatever line you put on it, how many of those people do you think actually have got married? And one of the people I was with was like, I think it's like 0.2% of the population. I was like, that's mental. Like, that is so many people. I was like, I'm saying it's probably 100 people in the entire 60 million population of the UK. So I'd be interested, on a completely separate note, I'd be interested to know what people's thoughts were on that. But I do think there is definitely like an element of that to this arrangement.
Yeah, definitely. And I could see, I think I mentioned this in previous episodes, like, I do think that, yeah, Sophie is the one that he would go back to, because she's probably the most like conventional person of like the women that he's been with. I mean, Sophie, I mean, she's kind of going off the rails here, but I think, you know, Sophie, prime Sophie, when they were back in their, you know, were in a relationship together, she was kind of the most conventional woman, I think, that he was with, that would kind of fit the 2.4 kids detached 4-bedroom house.
And that was ultimately what she wanted.
Yeah, exactly. I think that kind of makes sense, where, you know, these two would be the sort, you know, the types of people who would make that sort of arrangement. So it does make a lot of sense. Not that I'm not for it, but I think when I was watching this, you know, I was worrying that, like, is this how it's going to end? Like, is Mark going to end up with Sophie and it all kind of loops around to the very beginning? Like, that would kind of be fitting with the themes of Peep Show. So it, yeah, definitely kind of adds a new, you know, we're only 30, 40 minutes away from the end of the whole show here, and Sophie is looking like a, you know, she's suddenly in the running.
Support for podcast Secrets of the Pharaohs is brought to you by Manscaped, the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Manscaped offers precision engineered tools for your family jewels, and Manscaped just launched their fourth generation trimmer, the Lawnmower 4.0, all across Europe. You heard that right, the 4.0. Join over 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive offer.
20% off and free worldwide shipping with the code PEEP at manscaped.com. So why do you need Manscaped's Lawnmower 4.0? Well, we've all got our own nightmare grooming stories about shaving our nether regions. Whether it's nicks, cuts and grazes, or an unfortunate tale involving hair removal cream, it can seem like you're always a moment away from disaster. Not with the Lawnmower 4.0. After using it myself, it really does make a massive difference. It's quick, easy to use, and most importantly, I felt safe while using it. With the Lawnmower 4.0, Manscaped have engineered the ultimate groin trimmer, with their advanced skin-safe technology making you confident to shave your boys. So, if you're like Mark and are worried about your testicles looking abnormal, the Lawnmower 4.0 can give you the confidence to do something about it and make your balls feel like $1 million. So go on, start shaving your testicles like it's the most natural thing in the world, and get 20% off and free shipping with the code PEEP at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use code PEEP. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tools for the job with Manscaped. Your balls will thank you. But yeah, so they're on their way to Hans's, aren't they? And they manage to confront him. He seems to be heading out, as they do. And he's not really having it, is he? You know, he's kind of quite dismissive of Jeremy. He's kind of refusing to budge on the situation. He's saying that, you know, he came up with the lyrics. He doesn't have, you know, Jez, you don't have any proof. So what can you do about it? Like, it's kind of a done deal as far as Hans is concerned. So he heads out on his way, and Jeremy decides to break into Hans's house by, quote, cracking the spare key kind of puzzle using his superior
intellect.
His superior intellect. So he manages to solve the mystery of where the spare key is hidden.
I love the fact that Jeremy tries to give Hans he gives him a panettone, doesn't he? To sort of almost bargain with him as though that's going to somehow kind of work. And I like the, Hans's reaction of, sweet, like, what is it? And Jeremy being like, oh, I don't really know. You see them around. Because he's like, I think that's probably how most British people respond to panettone. Like, I don't think anyone quite knows what it is. Like oh, look, a dry cake in a box. Like,
yeah, like, how, is it a cake? Wonderful. Is it bread? What is it?
And I think that's now just like part of British tradition without anyone really knowing what it is. Especially in, and this isn't anywhere near Christmas, is it?
No, I'm not quite. It's not quite clear when this is. But yeah, they break into Hans's house. The first thing I thought was that Hans has got a much nicer house than like Mark's and Jeremy's flat. And given that we kind of know very little about what Hans does for a living, he seems to change jobs very frequently. So Molly must have a pretty decent job for a house like this in, I'm guessing, the London area. Maybe, you know, almost certainly not like the middle of London, but... Yeah, it struck me that Hans had a very sort of conventionally nice house.
Yeah, and I'm guessing it's Molly's. I'm guessing it is Molly's house that he's moved into, I'm presuming. But yeah, we never really establish what she does.
Certainly an upgrade, because it looked like a different place than the one we were at the start of the series. I don't know, we didn't get that good a look at it, but...
You think it's different or you think it's the same?
I it looked different to me, but we didn't really see it all very... I mean, we mainly
saw the bathroom,
didn't we?
No, I think we only saw the inside,
didn't we? But yeah, no, that was... Yeah, it just surprised me that how nice kind of Hans was living compared to the other two when Hans is normally the sort of person you'd expect to find in a skip. So, yeah, enough about Hans's nice house. Jez goes in to look for the lyrics after Hans had let slip that he has a lyrics folder that he keeps somewhere in the house. So Jeremy goes hunting around for that. And when he finds it, or rather finds it empty, he decides to sort of take his revenge on Hans in rather peculiar fashion.
Right, fucking revenge. Revenge is the sexy man's justice. Ooh, someone who is expecting cornflakes is gonna get a big fucking multi-hit of Shreddies. Boom.
That is inconvenient.
Okay, I'm gonna lick these apples and put his bank card in the freezer. You start swapping the CDs into the wrong cases.
Okay, I'm going.
Wait, watch this.
Oh, Jesus, I'm a backup burglar. I'm a burglar's PA.
No, Jeremy, really? Goldfish in the Shreddies? Is that your budget version of a horse's head in the bed?
It's the free gift that's going to send him clinically insane.
It starts off relatively, like, very childlike initially, doesn't it? Where he's licking the various food items and he's mixing up the cereals and things. And then all of a sudden it takes a bit of a darker turn when it's let's kill the fish and he ends up stealing Hans's pet snake. So it kind of escalates quite quickly, doesn't it?
Yeah, and again, it's one of those plans that he is given about 5 seconds worth of thought to, and then obviously the ramifications of what he's done come back to haunt him quite substantially in the rest of this episode. But yeah, it's a very sort of dark move by him to suddenly go from, I'm just going to mix up. Does he start mixing up the cereals?
Yeah.
And then, yeah, very quickly ends up like taking the fish and taking the snake. Or sort of, yeah. Does he kill? He kills the fish, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he scoops it out, I think, to put in the cereal, which is, yeah, essentially a death sentence, isn't it? So yeah, the poor fish kicks the bucket and the snake is sort of kidnapped, and he brings it with him, as you mentioned, to the kid cave, which is where we head to next and spend the rest of the episode.
Yeah, nearly half of the rest of the whole episode. Like, we've got 12, according to Netflix, we've got 12 and a half minutes left, and we don't leave the kid cave now, do we? We get this walk up to the kid cave where Mark and Jez are discussing, like, if you could go back to any time in history, where would you go back to? And Mark is sort of waxing lyrical about
Periclean Athens, Egypt under Ramesses I, the Ziggurat of Ur. God.
I think I'd probably go back to the 50s.
The 1950s? Jeremy, I'm talking about seeing a civilization that's unimaginably different.
So am I. Thick shakes, real fat burgers, big Chevys, cheerleaders.
But Socrates, if you went for 14 AD, you could nab Augustus and Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If not the 50s, then the 60s. See the Rolling Stones and have a Coke.
Jeremy, you can literally still do exactly that.
I'm talking about seeing them in their prime, drinking Coke out of a bottle.
Which leads me to ask you, Rob, when would you travel to, if you could? Let's play this game ourselves.
I was thinking about this, actually, as I was watching the episode. I don't know. Going back to like the Roman times or the Greek times doesn't particularly interest me. Like, I'm a historian, like my degree's in history, but I think going back to like the Tudor times would be, I wouldn't want to go back necessarily to an event. Like, I wouldn't be like, I want to go back and see the Great Fire of London, or I want to go back and see the Blitz, or like, I'm picking all London themed events here.
Yeah.
But I think I'd want to go back to it, like, yeah, a period. Maybe like the period of the English Civil War around that time, I think would be quite cool to go back to.
Interesting that all of these things that you're talking about are all quite, like, quite horrible events to live through, I would imagine.
And also quite Anglo-centric, I've just realised. But you've
tickled, yeah, very much so.
As Jeremy says, you've tickled my historical G-spot here. Like, I think going back, having said I wouldn't want to go back to an ancient civilization, I would love to go back to, like, the Mayans or, like, the Aztecs. Having been to Mexico in the past couple of years, and having seen like Chichen Itza and all that sort of stuff, I'd love to go back and see that sort of civilization. Enough about the Greeks.
I thought similar. Yeah, Mayan civilization did come to mind. I also went to Mexico not too long ago, but if you I don't know whether you had a tour guide when you were there, but there's a lot of cutting people's heads off and using them for sport and things in that kind of civilization. So I'd probably take a hard pass on that. For me, it would probably be, I'm leaning towards Mark here, I'd probably pick in like an ancient Rome or ancient Greece. Probably ancient Greece for me, if I could make it so that I was some kind of, you know, coming from the future. I would try and do a bit of a Jez and become a sort of like bullshit philosopher and just chill out with all the, you know, all the big wigs of that era, and just kind of muse what the meaning of life was and things like that.
And I love that Jeremy finishes this scene by just going, enjoy Cokeless Rome, dickhead.
Like, yeah.
I feel like your priorities are slightly wrong.
Definitely. But yeah, so they arrive at the kid cave. Mark is still weighing up Sophie's offer.
If I say yes, I'll regret it. That's certain. Claustrophobic, depressing, mouldering resentment.
Corrigan classic.
But if I say no, I'll also definitely regret it. Overwhelming feelings of regret, guilt and sadness.
The old familiar.
Mark!
Wow, my son.
Hi, Ian. Ian. How are you doing, little fella? Flicker of recognition. Basically uninterested.
Mark's worried about him not even recognising his own father, which seemed quite strange to me. Like, I know we don't see Ian very often. We touched on that at the top of the episode. But I just kind of presumed that they did spend a reasonable amount of time together, but it was just, you know, we don't see it because it's not particularly interesting for a sitcom.
Yeah, and I mean, kids, even if you've only seen them a couple of times, kind of recognise your face. Like, it really surprises me that he's seen so little of him that he genuinely would be worried. Or is it just Mark sort of being neurotic?
Probably. And he has worried before about, you know, whether he would think back when Jeff was on the scene and was with Sophie, he mentioned in his monologue saying, like, oh, you know, maybe he'll grow up thinking that Jeff's his dad. So there's probably a bit of that kind of in the back of his mind. But I still thought it was odd that he's wondering whether Ian would even recognise him.
Which is quite sad.
So, yeah, speaking of Ian, so he arrives and Jez kind of whisks him away. We don't really see all that much of Ian, do we? So he's whisked away to play in the, quote, rage cage, as Jeremy calls it. But straight off the bat, you know, Sophie, she's been there for all of about 10 seconds. She kind of puts Mark on the spot, asks him what he thinks of the offer. And having just been talking to Jez, saying he'd, you know, regret it either way, he comes to the decision to accept the offer. I know we've kind of talked about it at length already, but what did you make of the decision to accept?
I feel like it's obviously been brought on further by the fact that April's then is gone kaput, as Mark says. I think he's realizing, he's possibly coming to the realization, I'm nearly 40. I've got this kind of possible setup. It might be a slightly messed up, possibly toxic setup, but at least I'm not going to live alone or live with Jeremy, playing Guess the Revel, and whatever else they do. I think he is very much thinking like, just in for a penny, in for a pound. What's the worst that's going to happen? We already don't like each other. If it doesn't work, what are we going to say? Yeah, we could have predicted this. And he's kind of left himself with no choice. Well, until inevitably April arrives back and we think there might be a glimmer of hope again for him. At this point, it's a bit like, it'd be rude not to.
I guess for Mark, it's just that the fact that he's kind of miserable where he is anyway, you know, stuck with Jez, someone, you know, he lives with someone who, while, yeah, they kind of love each other at the core, but actually Jez kind of drives him mad. So is it really much of a, you know, is it that much of a downgrade to live with Sophie? At least it's, you know, we don't really know if they are, like, divorced or, like, kind of what the situation is. Presumably they are annulled, whatever. But I think moving in with Sophie in Nana's cottage with his son, you know, does get him sort of halfway to his idea of, you know, what a conventional, you know, adult should be. So I can see why he is tempted by it. And like you say, everything with April is currently, you know, all off the table. So, it doesn't surprise me at all that he accepts.
And Sophie realises she's got one stumbling block that she needs to overcome, and she needs to break up with Duncan, by the sounds of it. I don't think she's done that.
Yeah.
And also needs to ring her dad and let him know. And in her words, he's going to piss blood. But in her words, she wants to cry and be sick at the same time. Now, I thought it was really interesting. She's not drunk at this point, is she?
No, not so noticeably. That certainly changes because she is in a very bad way by the end of this episode.
Have you ever been to one of these places?
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of like Activity World, isn't it?
Well, have you ever been smaller. To one? Have you ever been to one as like an adult? Have you ever been with like your nephews or anything?
I've been to like a soft play, but nothing quite on. I've only been to stuff like smaller than this or much bigger than this.
See, like, I hadn't ever been. I've been to, like, we're talking about Activity World as though everybody who is listening to this podcast knows what we're talking about.
Activity World is like the sickest place ever. Anyone who doesn't know lives outside of Peterborough.
So the majority of, like, the majority of the people that listen to our podcast,
99.9% won't know what we're on about.
Everyone, it's like apart
soft play
from
area.
Everyone apart from your wife. I don't even know if she listens. But yeah, so no. Like, it's basically like a giant soft play, but like suitable in terms of size that you could go as like a older teen. Like, we went as older teenagers, didn't we? We booked it out for like a sick form social when we were like,
yeah, 18. That was hard work though, trying to get through some of the holes and things.
But like,
I
went to like a safari soft play with my nephews and my niece like a couple of months ago, and that is honestly like impossible to do when you're 6 foot, trying to get through some of the gaps that they can run through, and you're having to like commando like crawl underneath some of the things. Like, it's insane. I was dripping with sweat after like 5 seconds. It was so. I was like, This is crazy. Like, I don't remember it being this sort of like full on when we went to, because there's like Activity World and another Peterborough reference, Big Sky, which is kind of a similar sort of thing in Peterborough. But yeah, looking at this, it gave me sort of flashbacks to my childhood. But Jeremy comes back from having left Ian there, saying he's being detained at capitalism's pleasure, which I thought was a great metaphor for the kid cave.
Yeah, definitely. That's kind of a bit of a Corriganism, I thought. I thought that would perhaps be better coming out of Mark's mouth. But yeah, clearly, you know, he rubs off on Jeremy. So yeah, he's dropped Ian off. And it's at this moment that he kind of reveals that he's kidnapped Hans's snake, which we didn't see back when we were at his house or flat, whatever it was. And the fact that he's brought it with him to the play centre, Mark is kind of understandably horrified because this has, you know, all the ingredients for a disaster waiting to happen. We find out that this snake has been stolen. We know Hans likes his snakes. We saw him back with one during the party in series 6, and he said that that snake was a rental snake, didn't he? So we should assume, I'm guessing this is a different one.
But when Jeremy moved in a previous series, he had a whole room full of snakes.
Oh, that's true as well, yeah. So it could be any one of those, yeah. Interesting. So we just have to hope that it's not venomous, because, you know, Hans got the rhyme wrong, didn't he, last time when he had the rental snake.
And Jeremy just says it doesn't look venomous, which Mark is not buying as an excuse, although Jeremy does say, I picked it up with an oven glove, but I think it was probably okay.
Yeah, we're definitely not going to take that as some kind of genuine seal of approval. So yeah, Mark's understandably horrified by it. Jeremy, yeah, basically not bothered at all. He says, oh, it's fine, it's double bagged, as if it's like, you know, he's bought a load of ice cream in a paper bag or something. So yeah, Jeremy goes on to reveal that he's brought the snake with him here because he's planning an exchange with Super Hans at the play center. He's kind of holding the snake hostage, and he wants his name, his credit, to be added to the video. And if he doesn't do that, then I'm not quite sure what he's planning on doing with the snake, but it's his hostage for now, like, either way.
Yeah. And talking of hostages, April then appears.
Yeah, and it turns out that she's had a sort of second change of heart, hasn't she? Out of nowhere, she's kind of coming, she's going, but now she's kind of back on board and at least kind of decides to hear Mark out.
Yeah, and so they have this conversation where she lets him know that she's spoken to Angus, and he is clearly back in the stages of some sort of, it's not a manic episode, is it? It's not quite on like Mary's level, but he's clearly in the falls of a breakdown, and he's writing to the Pope, talking about the fact that he thinks he might be able to heal the great schism, which I'm not really sure what that is, and I didn't bother to Google it, but I'm guessing it's something to do with the difference between the Pope and the state, the church and the state. Don't know. If anyone wants to write it and let me know, then
I I didn't look it up either. I just thought of it as in terms of, like, you know, religions, you know, at odds with each other, was my impression of it. Like, whether it be internally with, like, Catholics versus Church of England, or, you know, Protestants, whatever. That was kind of my impression. But yeah, clearly Angus thinks that he has the answer to the sort
we
of
are
great
both
religious...
incredibly wrong. I've just googled it. The Great Schism split the main faction of Christianity into two divisions, Roman Catholic and Eastern Orthodox. The split is known as the Great Schism, or sometimes the Schism of 1054. So it's really something that Angus is probably not going to be able to heal.
That's kind of what I was saying, talking about Catholics versus, like, factions within the same religion. That's kind of, like, half right.
But you think this theologian who lives in London, who writes the Nicene Creed on his legs, is going to be able to heal this?
Yeah, and it's strange because, like, the Angus that we see is this sort of, like, charming gentleman intellectual, isn't he? He seems like he's, you know, we see a little bit, you know, he has the, you know, him and April have clearly got a dysfunctional relationship. On the whole, the Angus we see is a pretty normal, nice, kind of charming guy. But then the Angus that we hear about is just always some kind of lunatic.
Yeah, and I wonder whether he's just one of those people who can seem to hold it together in public, but then is sort of like a quivering mess when he,
yeah,
when he gets back behind closed doors. But in Mark's words, Mark's the Ferrari and Angus is the Volvo. Finally, Mark is sort of taking pole position here.
Yeah, and I think Mark, yeah, he likes being the kind of like the danger, like the bad boy of the one out of the two kind of love rivals, the one that will take coke and throw his iPad out the window, whereas, yeah, Angus is at home writing scripture all over his body. So I think, yeah, Mark definitely takes a joy out of that. But yeah, it's clear that April is very confused about her feelings and is kind of just ping-ponging around between Angus and Mark. But it's clear that, you know, that the more that she's, you know, stressing about this, it kind of sends her a little bit over the edge, because we've gone from kissing Mark at the flat the other night. She's suddenly kind of putting them, not even really putting the moves on him, she kind of just drags him into the toilets. And they have sex there in the at the kid cave.
I was about to say, they do a lot more than ping-ponging in there.
Yeah, it's pretty wild, really, because, like, April, you know, it's the innocent-looking ones that you kind of have to watch out for, because, you know, she's all shy and timid and a charming neuroses, but, you know, she's also up for a bit of coke and toilet sex. Like, it's an interesting one, and Mark seems to kind of attract these sorts of people, doesn't he, where they kind of have, yeah, different ends of the spectrum in one person.
And one of the things I wanted to touch on, which I alluded to earlier, was one of the lines that I was sure was going to come back to be relevant was, as they're starting to sort of get down to it in the toilet.
Oh, April, this is quite naughty.
Naughty, naughty.
Blimey. Disabled toilet baby changing shelf. The five sexiest words in the English language. Hope my son's okay with Jeremy and the snake. No, be in the moment.
I don't want to break the spell, but should I make haste to purchase some condoms, perchance?
That's fine, it'll be okay.
I wonder what kind of okay. No baby okay, or okay, we're having a baby. Quite interested, but bit rude to ask.
And I was sure that was going to have repercussions in the last episode. I remember watching this thinking, she's going to come back and say she's pregnant or something.
Yeah.
There's going to be some kind of, or like, turns out she had like an STD or something, or there was something like that. Felt like it was a really important line at the time.
Definitely. Yeah. And we've kind of been here sort of before with Mark and Sophie, when, you know, the condom broke and Sophie, it's almost similar in a way, because Mark was a bit like, you need to stop, like, sitting like that, but it was almost, you know, like she was stealing his sperm, and Mark kind of felt like it was too rude to be able to kind of really, you know, question it too much. But yeah, you're right, this is definitely, Mark has every right to be very concerned by that kind of response, but in kind of typical Mark fashion, it's that, you know, English reserve where we try and avoid confrontation of being too direct. But Yeah, definitely a weird one.
Yeah, so they head back out of the toilet. They notice Jeremy sort of... Is he like... what do you call it? He's stealing food is what you call it. I was trying to think what you call it. Mind sweeping, don't you? When you go around drinking drinks around a bar that don't belong to you. He seems to be like mind sweeping people's food. He just seems to be taking food off other people's plates.
Yeah, eating scraps. Yeah, it's great.
And Mark comes out and Jeremy's like, where were you? Like, I've been trying to like sort everything out. Where were you? And Mark's like, well, I've been in the toilet having that way with April. And Jeremy just says, Mark, you are on fire today. Shall I alert all the other women in here that you're about in case you try and hump them or move in with them? And Mark then sort of says to Jeremy, like, it's got to be April that I go with now. Like, now I'm stuck in a real sort of dilemma between the two of them. It's not really a dilemma. It's got to be April. Me, Sophie and Ian is a bit of a fantasy. It's a bit of a crazy sort of scheme. Whereas with April, it would kind of work. And actually, and Mark says himself, it would do Ian a lot of damage to have him living between two warring parents, which obviously we had a long discussion about earlier.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah, and I think he's right. Although he didn't really bring that up earlier, which and Jess's response is quite telling, which is, oh yeah, like that's the line with a wink. So it kind of feels like that actually isn't the genuine reason. Like Mark really just wants to be with April and he's kind of
to come up with a reason to.
Yeah, and the reason is actually the right reason, but it's for Mark, it's like the wrong reason, and he's having to use that as kind of cover, which I thought was interesting.
But we then realise that, as Mark says, oh, I'll contact Sophie and get her to pick Ian up from the flat. They go, but we actually don't know where Ian is.
No, and I think as well, like the fact that Mark just went to go and have sex in the toilets when he knows that there's a snake roaming about... and he doesn't know where his child is. Thought Mark, you know, we were criticising Sophie earlier, but Mark's certainly not winning any like Father of the Year awards either.
Well, he does say that. He does say as he's about to have sex with her. He does say like,
yeah, but yeah, passing thought, not enough to actually like act on it.
Anything, oh yeah, no, like, I'm not even defending. Worse.
But yeah, we're talking about Mark's bad parenting. Like he doesn't know where Ian is, but Sophie arrives right on cue as they're kind of talking about the decision to, you know, call things off. She looks horrifically drunk, like can barely walk. She's sort of stumbling around the whole place. She looks like a complete mess, and she's just spouting a load of nonsense about Duncan and his affair. As Mark is trying to find Ian in the play centre, he's kind of on his hands and knees, isn't he, getting in there with the other kids. And Sophie is just no help whatsoever because she can kind of barely function, can she?
No, she's sitting there sort of swearing and chatting rubbish about Duncan. And a little kid walks past her and she's like, oh, he's a prick, fuck him. And the boy laughs and Mark just turns to this little kid and goes, oh, the little lady's saying funny words because she's feeling funny. It's like, Mark just does not know how to interact with children. But then before pushing him and being like, not pushing him physically, sort of saying, like, have you seen a little boy? Why aren't you answering me? What have you done with him? You're like, Jesus Christ.
Becomes almost an interrogation, doesn't yeah. it? Yeah, and so they're trying. Mark's trying to do his best, at least. But Sophie decides that, you know, the drink's getting to her, and she decides to take a little bit of a nap. And so she kind of, ever so gracefully, slides down this slope, and it kind of is submerged into the ball pit that these other kids are kind of just playing in, and she kind of just drifts off into a drunken slumber.
Yeah, and Mark at this point is thinking, right, we're going to have a big chat once you've sobered up where I'm going to reverse out of this agreement as elegantly as a man backing his car into the peloton of the Tour de France. You're like, yeah, I think this would now be the absolute perfect moment to tell her you were sort of regaining on the agreement. Like, she's drunk. She might react irrationally now, but at least you can say you've told her. It's out of the way.
Yeah, that's true.
Drunk people move on from things normally relatively quickly. especially when she's clearly not going to get any more. Like, she's not sobering up anytime soon, is she? Like, he could tell her this, let her sleep, and then she'll have forgotten by the morning, but he knows he's told her.
That's one way of looking. That's a very Mark way of looking at it, definitely. So, yeah, maybe I'm a bit surprised that he didn't do that. But, yeah, we're kind of left with Sophie comatose in the ball pit, and Mark is carrying on trying to find Ian. But with Jeremy, Hans has finally arrived for the sort of exchange that he doesn't even know is about to take place. He's kind of none the wiser about the snake napping. But it turns out that the internet did have some extra bites. So Hans has kind of, without any real negotiation, has actually been able to update the video credit, gives Jez the credit that he, quote, deserves, which leaves Jez in a bit of a tricky spot, doesn't it? Because he's already kind of followed through and killed the fish and stolen the snake. And so all that kind of bargaining power he'd been holding is kind of just all irrelevant now.
Yeah, and like if Mark's having to reverse out of an agreement, this is what Jeremy's now suddenly having to do, because he's like, how am I going to get myself out of the fact that I've murdered your fish, which is kind of by the by, but like I've also got your snake and I'm not currently sure where it is.
Yeah, it's funny. Hans initially seems a bit upset about the fish killing, but then he seems to get over it very, very quickly. And then when Jez realises that the snake has escaped and is kind of distracted looking around for it, Hans is more curious as to like why, you know, Jez is behaving peculiarly. And kind of just seems to like gloss over the fact that he's killed one of his pets.
Although it has one of the ultimate Superhands lines where he just goes, not Flop. Flop was one of the good guys. He was old school. But he's a fish, mate.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, so Jez is more worried about the fact that this snake has escaped. He doesn't really know whether it's a danger or not. For all we know, the whole play centre could be in danger. And as we know, Ian is unaccounted for. Which brings us back to Mark. He's still looking for him with that added kind of hanging over him. This snake is on the loose. Jeremy reassures him that it isn't venomous. I think he says that he did look it up, didn't he? I'm not quite sure how reliable Jez is for that, but it seems to kind of put Mark a little bit at ease that, you know, Ian isn't in any kind of like real danger. But I mean, a snake loose in the play centre is still, you know, definitely a worry for all those kids.
Yeah, regardless, I don't think I'd want to see a snake crawling through my house, even though I knew it wasn't going to bite me.
Yeah.
Or if it bit me, it wasn't going to kill me. But they debate what they're going to do to try and find it, whether they sort of try and evacuate everybody by almost alerting them to the fact there's a snake in there, or whether they carry on doing what they're doing, or whether they just say that, like, that Jeremy's a famous pedo.
Yeah, Mark fairly willing to just kind of throw Jez under the bus here, trying to embrace the kind of the wank bullet spirit. Jez is quite that liberal with labels or something, isn't it? Like, doesn't really care about what people think. But I think outing him as a pedo when he isn't is I think that's a line that even Jez wouldn't cross.
No, and talking of crossing lines, Mark then discovers Sophie is balls deep, as Jeremy puts it, in the ball pit, and realises that it's quite a mess he's got himself into, and the way to get out of it is to basically bury her, or add to the burying, because she's already partly buried, in amongst the balls. So Jeremy and Mark get down and they start like shoveling the balls over the top of her, so she is then completely submerged under the balls, which is just... This is an Oscar-winning actress, and this is where she has degraded herself to.
Yeah, so yeah, they bury her because they can see that April is returning back to that. She's taken her niece outside to kind of calm down. And yeah, Mark kind of resorts to hiding her rather than just leaving her be. I guess he's kind of ashamed of Sophie's behaviour. He's determined to keep her away from April at all costs. It's a weird one because it's never going to end well, is it? Like, I just think you just have to kind of bite the bullet and just accept that Sophie's there and maybe just kind of take April away. But Jez, like, quick as a flash, is like jumping in, ready to help him.
There are so many of these situations in Peep Show, though, where they just go for like short-term solution. Like, if you think like when Jez is lying about the baby being his,
yeah,
like, that's obviously a lie that's going to come out very, very quickly. Like, there are so many examples where they're like, I'm going to say this without even really thinking, on the basis that this will get me through the next 20 seconds. But otherwise, it's going to have to be a lie that I'm going to keep up for the rest of my life. And as luck would have it, April then appears and sees Mark. He's found Ian, and her niece has been saying something about there being a snake, which is obviously quite disconcerting. But Mark goes full steam ahead with his plan to continue with April, and just sort of says, "Do you want to like come back to mine for a wine?" And they're about to sort of move forward, ride off into the happiness, into the sunset. And as luck would have it, the ball pit witch decides to emerge.
She surfaces, yeah, like some kind of crazy monster, doesn't she? But in her kind of confused daze, she's kind of, her arms come breaking through like a zombie coming to life. And yeah, she kind of, the game's up at this point, isn't it? Sophie essentially just blabs about everything, you know, oh, like, if you didn't want to move in with me, like, you didn't have to bury me, and which just leaves April completely freaked out by the whole thing, and she makes an exit pretty sharpish, doesn't she?
It reminded me of the scene with Mark and Sophie's dad, where he lies about about not loving Sophie, and then sort of goes, no, but it was the distortion because of the there might be a Roman coin. I was half expecting him to be like, he does it several times. He does it in the in the toilets of the fuck bunker gig. He does it when he like denies who Sophie is when she's like lying on the floor crying in front of Dobby.
Yeah, he does.
Like, he just really must think Sophie is some absolute mess to just think that this is a long-term plan.
Yeah, so that kind of leaves Mark's plans. He was so close, as ever, so close to riding off into the sunset with April, like you say, but he's been foiled. And that kind of leaves Mark to leave, go home with Jez, as always. And the pair of them have made no real effort to kind of resolve the snake issue. As we heard, you know, April's niece had mentioned that she had either seen it herself or that other kids had seen it. Instead, they choose to just flee the scene. And as we end the episode, as I mentioned at the top, this episode has one of my favourite of all time sign-offs, as Jez says,
"It doesn't feel quite right, leaving a snake in a child's soft play area.
Burying your wife alive. It just has such an unfortunate ring.
Maybe we should leave a note.
Saying?
Sorry, snake."
And they just walk off into the sunset.
That's it. Yeah, we never kind of hear like what happens with the snake. But there we go. That is the end of the penultimate episode of Peep Show.
Fancy a punt on the quizzy? Shit a bit of data out of that bunged up brain box. I'll do the buttons, do the answers.
Which brings us on to the penultimate Peep Show quiz, or my last quiz. So you're going to finish us off for the whole show. So, the penultimate one's on me. I've got my 10 questions. Are you ready? This will be your last time actually being quizzed.
I'm going for full marks.
Full marks. Whoa, that is the challenge. Okay. Let's dive into it then. So, to start us off, which languages does Mark want to force Ian to learn?
Mandarin?
I need, there's more than one.
Greek?
A little bit more specific.
Ancient Greek.
Ancient Greek, yep, correct. Number two, who does Sophie believe Duncan is cheating on her with?
Allison with the Mazda.
Correct. Number three, what was Mark's reaction when he saw how Ian held a pen?
He shit a brick?
Yeah, he nearly shat.
Oh,
yeah.
Nearly shat.
I'll take that. Number four, what was Jez and Hans's band called in the mid-90s?
Oh my god. The song was All the Whores of Malta. Oh my god. Do you know what? I tweeted about this saying, I've only just realised that it was All the Whores of Malta was the name of the song, yes. not the name of the band. And because he references two, there's like, they teamed up with somebody and did a bit of turbo folk. Grandma's Boner.
Yeah, Grandma's Boner is correct. Yeah, I hadn't really acknowledged that as like, there was a band name, because we tried to list them all, didn't we, between us, and yeah, I never thought of these guys. So yeah, Grandma's Boner is correct. But who did Jez and Hans team up with in the mid-90s? You mentioned the Turbo Folk, but who did they team up with?
Oh my god. It's Perpetual something. Perpetual... Nah, I don't know. It's not Perpetual Motion, but...
I'll give you a half point. It's Perpetual Spinners. Very close. And then you've already answered this one, but what's the name of the track?
Oh, that's All the Whores of Malta.
Correct. So where does that leave us? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Number 7. How does Sophie keep referring to Mark?
She refers to him as her ballast.
Correct. What's Mark's IQ?
It's 133.
Correct. And according to Jeremy, what's the journey of life?
Oh, we talked about this. I'm so glad we talked about this. It's Radio 1, Radio 2, Classic FM, Heart Magic. Dead.
Correct. Yeah, we only did that last one. Yeah, very good. Yeah, the order was important. And then finally, what would cap off a very, very impressive score is, what are the 5 sexiest words in the English language?
Oh, do I need them in the right order? Because I think I can get the... I think I can get the I can get the mess... Oh, no, because it's the 5 specific words.
Yeah.
Oh, God, I know what the scene is. It's... disabled toilet... Baby, disabled toilet baby something. Baby changing shelf.
Disabled toilet baby changing shelf. Yeah, that is right. Those are the 5 sexiest words. That's a very impressive score. That is 9.5. So you were just the word spinners away from a perfect score. So that's very, very impressive. A strong finish to your Peep Show quizzing career, as
I'm
it were.
I'm slightly sad. I'm like, this is, I mean, not for my score, I'm impressed with my score, but I'm sad that I'm not gonna have one of your quizzes again. We did talk off air, and Doug, if you're listening and not too busy, then we are hoping that one of our patrons and expert quiz writer Doug might join us for another quiz. I did think about, and again, maybe if you're listening, I did think about like seeing if Liam Noble wanted to get involved, be our quiz master.
That would be cool. Yeah, or even if he wanted to take part as well. I quite like the idea of doing like a round per series or something, with maybe a question from each episode, say 54 questions.
That's what we need to do. We need to get Doug to write the questions, and it's me and you and Liam. Come on, Liam, I know you listen to the podcast. So
that would be ideal. We'll see if we can make that happen for the ultimate Peep Show quiz. But yeah, that brings your run to an end with a very impressive 9.5. So I've got my work cut out for me when I round it off with your final quiz next week. But that then, sadly, brings us to the end of episode 5 of series 9. That is our penultimate sort of main traditional format episode over. So thank you for joining us as always. If you've enjoyed the show, then please do take a moment to leave us a review. And if you haven't already, I'm not really sure if there is much point in subscribing because we're coming very near the end. But if you want to know when the last few, as I say, we will do some specials after next week as well, but if you want to get them, then do subscribe. But that means that you join us next week for the big one, episode 6, series 9, the final episode of Peep Show, which is called Are We Going to Be All Right? And I feel like, you know, that's a good question. With it being the end of Peep Show, nearly the end of this podcast. I'm not sure if I am going to be all right, but I'm sure it will be. How can people get in touch with us, Rob?
What's the point? No, if you want to find us on Facebook, you can search Podcast Secrets of the Pharaohs. If you want to search for us on Twitter, it's at Podcast Pharaohs. Instagram, at Podcast Secrets of the Pharaohs. If you want to send us an email, podcastsecretsoftheferos@gmail.com. And I think that's about it. I don't really use the TikTok account too much anymore. And if you want to find us on Reddit, I don't know whether that's how you... Is that how Reddit works? You find us on Reddit? it's peep-show-podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. So give us a follow in all those usual places. Especially as, you know, going forward, Rob and I have mentioned before, we've got plans beyond Podcast Secrets of the Pharaohs. And if you want to be part of them and hear about them as well, for updates on that, then follow us in those places as well, because we will reveal all on those channels as well. But yeah, any final closing thoughts, Rob, as we wrap up the penultimate episode?
No, I like I said, good, solid episode. And it still doesn't feel quite real that, like, we're recording this on the 11th of October. So we're recording it on the 11th. You'll then hear it on the 16th, or it'll be released on the 16th. And then probably by the time that you're either listening to it or the day after you're listening to it, we'll have recorded the last one. It's really, really bizarre.
Like, yeah,
I remember recording Warring Factions, sitting in my dining room, recording it with your phone, like, on the top of, like, a coffee cup or, like, on the top of, like, a glass. And now, I mean, our setup's not exactly, like, mega professional, but we've got computers, we've got microphones, and we've got headphones, which is a vast improvement on how we started off. So, I mean, I'll save all the emotional soppy stuff for the last episode. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I always don't want to record the last episode. I'm like, let's have a month delay, and then we'll come back to it.
Delay the inevitable. Yeah, there'll be plenty of time to kind of reminisce, and yeah, the podcast is nearly 3 years old, so I'd quite like, maybe on our third birthday, we can kind of look back over everything, the journey. Because like you say, yeah, we've come quite a long way. Well, by no means are we any kind of, you know, studio quality outfit. But yeah, we've definitely come a long way from my phone stuck on top of a book or something.
I tweeted this actually this afternoon, saying, I tweeted something about it being World Mental Health Awareness Day. And I tweeted a picture and I shared it on Instagram about mental health. And then Sam Bain replied with, like, a peep show joke on our Instagram page. And he comments on quite a lot of the stuff. And I'm like, if you told me 3 years ago that when we started recording the podcast that Sam Bain would be commenting on our Instagram post. And I got a message. I don't think I told you this, Tom. This is a good story for going on air. I got a message on Instagram, like, direct message on Instagram from Andrew Newman, who I hadn't recognised the name when I initially saw the name come up. And then when I clicked on his Instagram page, he's basically, like, one of the old, like, directors of comedy, like, one of the executive directors of comedy for all of Channel 4. Like, he was, like, one of their, like, the proper Channel 4 bigwigs.
Crazy.
And he messaged me and basically went, I've got loads of pictures of, like, the final day of filming of Peep Show and, like, the final read-throughs. So yeah, if you want me to send them to you, then I can do. I was like, that's incredible. He was, like, the head of comedy and entertainment at Channel 4 and, like, chairman of BAFTA and all of this sort of stuff. Like, insanely famous, or insanely, like, important person in comedy on Channel 4, just messaging us being like, I can help you out if you want. So yeah, it's still insane. So I still look back and I'm like, it's nearly a year ago since we interviewed David Mitchell. That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, we've definitely come a long way. So I've had a lot of fun, and it's not over just yet. We've got a little bit more to go.
No, tune in for next week as well, please.
Yeah. So don't miss the finale. I'm looking forward to it, even if, yeah, it's kind of like going over the edge of a cliff. You don't know what's after. But yeah, we'll finish up there. So thank you very much, everyone, for listening. And once more, thank you for joining me, Rob.
Butter the toast, eat the toast, shit the toast. God, life's relentless.